You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being here as we get ready for the weekend. Lots to get to today. Arkansas baseball coach Dave Van Horn will be on our show a little bit later. We'll also talk with Ethan Westerman about the Razorbacks' second football scrimmage of the preseason. But first, we go to Phil Steele. You probably know who Phil is. If you love college football, you've probably read his magazine. I've got one sitting here right here with me. Phil does a great job for nearly 30 years putting out a great preseason product. And, Phil, we appreciate you being on our show.
Hey, a real pleasure, man. Always enjoy talking Arkansas football.
Well, thank you. And we got a lot to talk about. Looking through your magazine, you say that you think Arkansas will be an underdog in about eight games this year. But, you know, kind of reading between the lines, you seem to like what Sam Pittman does just in terms of having his team prepared to play most games. And it seems to me like you think Arkansas will be competitive this year, even if the record may not be great.
Yeah, I think they've got a great shot of actually getting to a bowl game. You go back to last year, for example, mm-hmm. not only were they banged up at the quarterback position with KJ Jefferson, but they lose Rocket Sanders. And even with that, they played the toughest four-game stretch in college football at LSU, away from home against A&M, at Mississippi, at Alabama. And in those four games, three times they lost by single digits, twice mm-hmm. by just a field goal, sort of got beat up in that stretch. And then was it the same in the final four games? But I love the way that they play with the big boys. And I think if they break through, you know, like they almost did against LSU, like they almost did against Ole Miss or Alabama, they've got a great shot at getting to a bowl game.
You know, obviously playing in the SEC, the schedule is going to be difficult. And around here, people, I think they just kind of throw up their hands and say, we got the most difficult schedule in the country. I'm kind of with you, and I mentioned this on our show last week. You know, when you look at their schedule, yes, it's difficult, but they get a lot of games at home. They get the A&M game at a neutral site. So even though the name appeal really is there with the schedule, it's not necessarily the most difficult schedule that they face.
No, I agree. And you go back to last year, as mentioned, they took on Alabama, Mississippi State, and LSU and were basically one or two plays away from winning those games. Mm-hmm. They get Tennessee at home. They get LSU at home, and it seems like every single year they play LSU extremely tough. It's homecoming. They're off a bye. I like that situation. They get Ole Miss at home. Those are three games that I think could be pivotal to the success of Sam Pittman and this team this year. And I also like the hire of Bobby Petrino as the offensive coordinator, and I think he's got a healthier backfield to work with this season.
Yeah, Sam Pittman's teams have been very good coming off of bye weeks. As you mentioned, the LSU game, they get a couple of extra days to prepare for Oklahoma State over in Stillwater, bye before Texas. That's a very interesting kind of discussion as it relates to the schedule. Phil, what is a meathead, and why is Landon Jackson on your all-meathead team?
The meatheads are done by the guys on Sirius Radio, and I had them contribute their meathead article to the magazine. It's Jacob Hester is the main guy mm-hmm. that does that, and the meathead is just a hardworking, like a slob of a guy that just is out there playing, and I love putting their team in my magazine each year.
It's a term of endearment. It's kind of like a dirt bag in baseball, right?
Yes, absolutely. Too gritty to be pretty is the meathead motto.
Bruce Feldman, who does a great job with his Freaks team for The Athletic, he had Landon Jackson on his Freaks team. I think that probably kind of fits into the meathead persona, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's a guy that you look at 6'7", 282 pounds coming off the edge. I'm looking for a big year out of him.
You have got a stock market indicator that I find kind of fascinating in your magazine. Explain that to people and why you are bullish on Arkansas.
Yeah, and the stock market indicator, what it does is it takes the 2 years prior to last year and adds the two win totals together and comes up with a number, an average. And so the Arkansas average win total in 21 and 22 was 8 wins. Mm-hmm. Last year, they dropped down to 4. And what mm-hmm. do you do when a stock drops low, Matt?
You would sell, right?
You buy.
Oh, you
buy when the stock is
low. Hey, I'm not a stock guy, Phil, I promise.
You probably didn't catch the question quick enough. But I think when it went from 8 down to 4, they usually bounce back up. And I think that's what Arkansas is going to do this year. I look for, like I said, I'm pretty bullish on the fact they've got a great chance of getting to a bowl game.
My macroeconomics professor is probably more ashamed of me now than he was when I was in his class many years ago. You use analytics to grade the conferences, and you grade the SEC the best. And, you know, a lot of people, they'll just say, hey, SEC football is the best. I think, you know, the championships kind of speak for themselves, but also the championships have been won by a select few teams. Analytically looking at this, why do you think the SEC is the best conference? What makes them better than the others?
What I do is I add up all the power ratings for the teams, divide them by the amount of teams in the conference, and the SEC does come up number one. And there's other factors put in there, how the SEC does against other conferences, how the SEC does in bowl games, total amount of draft picks coming out of the conference, which the SEC dominates on a yearly basis. But it is close with the Big Ten. And I'll say this, last year, I thought three conferences were actually close to being the best, in the SEC, the Big Ten, and unfortunately, the Pac-12 in its final year probably had its best year in the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of talent last year. I put all three of those conferences pretty close last year. This year, there's clearly two conferences head and shoulders above everybody else, and that's the SEC and the Big Ten.
You know, you mentioned the Pac-12 2 years ago. Had they mentioned that they were going away, I don't know that people would have missed it so much, but I thought the Pac-12 was as fun to watch as any league in the country last year.
Yeah, their quarterback play, their overall teams they had. You know, USC with Caleb Williams, Bo Nix at Oregon, Michael Penix in Washington. And you could go on and on. It was a loaded conference. And like I said, it was probably the best the Pac-12 had been in 15 years. I am remiss that we're not going to have West Coast football like that again.
Yeah, that's right. Looking at your all-SEC team, you don't have any Razorbacks on the first team. You do have Landon Jackson on the second. You've got Isaiah Satania on the second as a punt returner. You go on down the teams, Josh Braun's on there, Andrew Armstrong. What do you like about these players?
Well, start with Landon Jackson, as mentioned. He's a big guy that's going to be able to get after the quarterback. He's on that freak list. He's going to be someone that rushes the passer, and yet at 6'7", 282, he's stout and can hold up the line of scrimmage, which is big. Who else did you say we had on the list?
You had Josh Braun, you had Isaiah Satania, and Andrew Armstrong.
And with Josh Braun, he's a guy that just seems to get better each week. His quickness is better. He's tough. He's very bright. He's scored very high on the ACT. Mm-hmm. He's got the experience that you want on the inside. And you know, you at 6'6", 349, that's not necessarily coaching. That's a really good-sized guy. And then with Satania, he's a guy that's is a better route runner this year. He's always had the speed, and I think he's going to emerge. He's been mostly a special teams guy the last couple years, but look for him to really emerge this year.
Yeah, Bobby Petrino likes Satania. I actually call Fayetteville High School games, so I've been watching him for many, many years, even before he got to Arkansas. But, Phil, I'm so impressed with his hands. I think that may be a little bit of an underrated element to him. And he reminds me, if you think back to when Petrino was here earlier, he reminds me of a Joe Adams type, of a Jarius Wright type. And I think Petrino is going to find ways to use him and utilize him real well in this offense.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100% in that respect.
Let's talk about Petrino and the value that he adds to Arkansas. I think the expectation here is that the offense is going to be better, probably can't be a whole lot worse than it was last season. What do you think Bobby Petrino adds to the team? And what did you see from A&M last year that looked like Petrino, maybe didn't look like some of the things he's done in the past? Because I know he was in a unique situation there with Jimbo Fisher. But maybe just overarching question, what do you think he adds to Arkansas?
Well, I think the one thing I've always liked about Bobby Petrino is his game plans for the individual games and the schemes that he has. He also gets the best out of the players on hand. And and you take a look, I think he's stepping into a really good situation here because Arkansas was sort of shorthanded at the running back spot last year with Rocket Sanders not being 100%. But I love Jaquindon Jackson coming in from Utah. He's a guy that was a quarterback a couple of years ago, is now in his third year being a running back. Mm-hmm. He's 6'2", 235. I think he's going to be tremendous. And Petrino's got to feel very lucky to have him. And then how about Taylen Green, a quarterback, 6'6", 223, a guy that can hurt you running, hurt you passing. They've got Malachi Singleton behind him. I like the weapons that he's got to work with in the skill positions. And I also like the offensive line. They've got Sam Pittman there, always develops the offensive line. They've got a much improved offensive line this year. So I think what Petrino's going to do is get the most out of the individual players on hand, like you mentioned with Satania at the slot position.
The Razorbacks, they start with UAPB in a couple of weeks, and everyone expects that to be a runaway game. The game that a lot of people really have circled right now is September 7th over – at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's a top 25 team. Arkansas's going to be an underdog in that game. But how do you think Arkansas might match up with the Cowboys? Maybe if you can, give us a little bit of a glimpse into what you've seen from Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Oklahoma State's loaded this year. They have got 19 returning starters, 10 on offense, 9 on defense. They go from number 115 on my experience chart all the way up to number 1.
Oh, wow.
And last year they got a lot better after about 4 or 5 games. I thought the Kansas State game was really the turning point of their season. They were 2-2. They had a blowout loss to South Alabama. Then all of a sudden they turned it on and got all the way to the Big 12 title game. They've got Ollie Gordon in the backfield. Bowman, I think, will be better this year. Last year was, let's face it, an average quarterback. He had 15 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, but it's his second full year as a starter. They've got a veteran offensive line, and almost the entire defense is back. They're also an extremely tough team at home. You know, they've only lost 3 home games the last 4 years. It gets very loud there, so that's going to be an extremely difficult test for Arkansas. But go back to what I said at the start, is Arkansas doesn't blink when it comes to these big games. You go into LSU last year, number 12 in the country, could have beat them, only lost by 3. Go and face the number 16 team in the country, Ole Miss, they were on a roll, only lose by 7. And even Alabama, they only lose by 3. They were, of course, a team that won the SEC last year. So I like the fact that Sam Pittman's boys can go in and play against a team that may be better, may have more talent, even in a hostile environment, and play extremely well.
So you mentioned experience for Oklahoma State. And it's not just experience that they have, but Oklahoma State, it feels like, for the most part, they've been able to keep, you know, a core group of guys together for a while. Obviously, Gundy's been there forever. How much do you think that experience matters when there is so much roster turnover maybe going on elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it matters a lot. Go back to last year. If you look at my experience chart, Michigan was near the top of my experience chart. Washington was near the top of the experience chart. And, you know, we've seen teams like Colorado, perhaps, that do a lot of turnover, and they do bring in experienced guys, but they haven't been there. I think it is a factor to have the same guys on the same team. And that's one of the reasons, Matt, that I think Clemson's going to be a surprise team this year. You know, Clemson last year actually had a 94-50 first down edge in their 4 losses, and they've got practically the entire team back, and they don't use the transfer portal, but they don't have to. They only lost 3 players, and they're too deep to the transfer portal. So they may have the best team chemistry, you know, of any team out there, because all these players were recruited by Clemson. They're still at Clemson, and they were all big-time recruits. So watch out for Clemson this year, going back to your experience on the same team level.
Phil, talk to me about the process of putting this magazine together, and how did it come about, and how has it lasted for so long?
You know, I tell you what, Matt, it started about 32 years ago. I would buy all the preseason magazines. And back then, how many were there? There was like 20 preseason magazines on the shelf in 1995. And I would write down all the information from all the magazines. And some teams I couldn't even have a starting lineup done because it was all the same information and very little of it. So I started compiling all the information myself. One day somebody walked in my office and said, why don't you turn it into a magazine? I put it into a magazine. I'm a workaholic. I work on nothing but college football. And so we just have 3 to 4 times the amount of information of anybody else. It's all in the same format. We give you 2 full pages on every team. And, you know, they're all lined up exactly the same, you know, exactly to where to look for it. But it's an exhaustive process. I go through a 3 write-through process. The first one is a postseason write-through where I do it after the season complete, read through every article that's written about the team, go through every ebb and flow of the team and the positions. The second write-through is a pre-spring. And then the third one is actually after talking to the head coaches. And I talked to 124 of the 134 head coaches this year. And they average about an hour each, going over every single player on the team, every single position. And it's just a labor of love is what it is. The transfer portal's made it a lot tougher these last couple years, Matt. And we do a lot more rewrites during those final few weeks of the transfer portal.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I think your magazine comes out a little bit later than some of the other preseason ones do. And if you publish too early, you might miss a player or two.
Yeah, you know what? The my main guys, Lindy and Athon, were on the newsstand when my magazine was still not at the press, and they had to go to the press when the portal was still open. And now, you know, we wait till the portal's closed. We give it a full month plus a week to make sure we capture everybody. I like to feel we've captured 98% to 99% of the players where they signed.
The ability to talk to the coaches the way you do. I mean, you've got pages in here that talks about the accuracy of your magazine and you compare them to some of the other preseason magazines, I would feel being able to have that hour plus in some cases maybe of probably off the record discussions that probably helps inform your opinion quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's massive. And be honest with you, Matt, it's the favorite part of my job is talking to the head coaches. And it is all off the record for the most part. I mean, mm-hmm. naturally, I could put some stuff on the record that is nice. But it's a tremendous part of the accuracy process.
Let's circle back around to Arkansas real quick. Like we said, eight games, you think they're going to be an underdog. But you said you think they could get to a bowl game this year. Ceiling-wise, what do you see the ceiling for Arkansas?
All right. Well, the floor, I think this year – well, all right, let's go with the ceiling. So I'm going to say they beat Arkansas, Pine Bluff, UAB, get Tennessee at home, at Mississippi State, I think, is a winnable road game, and Louisiana mm-hmm. Tech at home. So that's five. I think Mississippi's a winnable game. LSU's a winnable game. Auburn's a winnable game. So that's six, seven, eight. And the way they pull upsets, I would say the ceiling for Arkansas this year is 9-3. Now, that's everything goes right. You stay healthy mm-hmm. and pull the maximum amount of upsets. I think 9-3 is the ceiling.
Phil, we appreciate your time. Great stuff as always, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, Matt, a lot of fun talking football with you. Always enjoy talking Razorback football.
Appreciate you, Phil. Phil Steele of Phil Steele's College Football Magazine. You can find it on newsstands right now. When we come back, we're going to have Ethan Westerman in studio with us. Ethan and I will discuss the Razorbacks football scrimmage yesterday at Razorback Stadium, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And hey, welcome back. We want to tell you that the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club is going to meet next Wednesday, August 21st, noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. Sam Pittman will be our guest speaker. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com. That's OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Ethan Westerman is with me now from Whole Hog Sports. And, Ethan, let's talk a little bit about the scrimmage yesterday. The headline is that there were eight interceptions thrown. What we don't know is which quarterbacks threw interceptions. We know that three of them were tipped. I don't tend to really get so – I know that there's some anxiety where people read about that. I don't tend to get so worked up about it for a couple of reasons. Number one, maybe three, they didn't have some of their best receivers out there. I think that probably changes things just in terms of route running and options and things like that. Number two, I go back to what Bobby Petrino said earlier in the week, that this is the time of the year where you're challenging your quarterbacks to try to make those throws and fit them into those windows to see what they can do well and what they can't.
Yeah, that's my exact thoughts too. I mean, it's going to be a little concerning anytime you see the right interceptions in a scrimmage, especially when you consider that last week they were also without Armstrong and Broden. But like you said, Petrino just earlier this week said that he wants his quarterbacks to be aggressive right now. It's the mm-hmm. time to do that. And there were about 200 plays in this scrimmage yesterday, and we don't know which quarterbacks threw these. It sounds like, based on who got the interceptions, that probably Taylen Green threw one or two. Maybe Singleton and KJ Jackson, the two behind him, threw one or two. But I would guess that a lot of these might have even been thrown by the guys behind them, some of those walk-ons. So it's not I don't think it's too alarming, especially considering we just don't know the full context. It is going to be one of those things you see, and that's never going to be good, that there were eight interceptions in a scrimmage. We don't see that every scrimmage that happens, but I think this is one of those instances where it would have been great to be at the scrimmage to kind of get a little bit more context mm-hmm. on those, because right now we're just going based on we heard there were this many picks, here's who got the picks, and making assumptions based off that.
A couple of other things. Sam Pittman said he didn't like how the offensive line played yesterday, said they really got beat by the defensive front, said Landon Jackson was, quote, a beast mm-hmm. During the practice. And, you know, one other thought that I had on this, and I've have lost my train of thought here. I know what it was. The defense, they did not play well last week, and we think that this defense is going to be a good defense. I don't know that we'd go how good, we don't know. But we think they could be a good defense this year. They're going to respond when they get embarrassed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that these guys on defense were kind of licking their chops, ready to get going.
Yeah, it sounds like from last week's scrimmage, like I said, we don't go to these. We just kind of can piece together what we hear. We get kind of the notable plays and the general theme based on what Sam Pittman says. But last week sounds like the offense got off to like such a good start.
Mm-hmm.
The defense probably was embarrassed. I mean, Isaiah Satania had like two deep touchdown or deep catches. One of them was for a touchdown right off the bat. Sounds like the defense responded in the second half of last week and maybe just carried that right into this scrimmage. It's kind of crazy. This defense, it took such a leap last year. I mean, it was the best that Arkansas has been in total defense since 2014, which that kind of gets swept under the rug whenever you have a 4-8 season. But it wouldn't surprise me to see them even, you know, maintain or take a step forward this year. So I think it's a pretty good defense. I'm not sure I'm going to go ahead and say that I think they're going to be great or anything, but I think that Travis Williams, what he's done in going into his second year already, is pretty remarkable.
Defensive critiques that Sam Pittman had, he said they've got to get better tackling. He said yesterday in the scrimmage there were too many holds by the secondary. Offensive line is something that keeps standing out to me. Patrick Kudus is still out. Sam Pittman said that they don't want to rush him back from this back injury and have it turn into something that is more long term. They want to make sure that he's healthy before they put him back out there. Tyquese Crawford, he said, is, quote, dealing with a little injury. But as far as Kudus goes, they said he might be back next Monday. It might be the following Monday. It feels like we're getting to the point that Patrick Kudus, you're probably not going to see him in that first game against Pine Bluff just because of the lack of practice that he has. If he gets back Monday, maybe the Monday after, I would think that you're probably going to see a reshuffled offensive line relative to what we thought we would see in that first game.
Yeah, I mean, it might not feel like it, but we are less than 2 weeks away from their season opener. It is yesterday was marked the 2 weeks away mm-hmm. point. If you're not back at practice yet, I mean, there is a ramp-up period that any athlete who's been out for with an injury for a amount of time, they have to go through a little bit of a ramp-up period to even get back to where they're ready for the game. And it seems like that kind of has been the theme of the past week and a half of practices, is just how can they get this offensive line to where they feel comfortable if they don't have him? Or who knows if they'll have him for the first game? We just don't know. Sounds like Sam Pittman's being pretty optimistic about getting him back. A back injury is one of those things that I would guess, I've never really had a major back injury, but it sounds like it can, you know, be a reoccurring thing that bothers you. So you need to have options throughout the season. If you don't have a guy like Patrick Kudus, I would be surprised if he is back the next Monday, not this coming Monday, if he plays in that first game.
You can read all of Ethan's stories at wholehogsports.com. Analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on every team. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. One of the stories you can read today, by the way, two stories that Anthony Christensen had from last night as Arkansas soccer team opened the season with a 7-1 victory over John Brown out at Razorback Field. Stories like that on our website. Hope you'll check it out. Back to offensive line real quick. And again, we don't see the scrimmages, so we don't really know what the struggles are. But we heard Petrino say earlier in the week, it took a long time for the run game to get going,
mm-hmm.
to get in sync. I think those were the words that he used. And now we're seeing issues in protection in this latest scrimmage. Granted, they're playing a good defensive front, but I don't know. These at least to me, these are a little bit of, you know, these are kind of alarm bells that are going off based on what we saw from the offensive front last year.
Yeah, you can't hear things like Sam Pittman saying we struggled to pass protect day and not think a little bit of a red flag is up. I think after the season they went through last year struggling on the offensive line, anything that is said about the offensive line struggling is going to raise alarms. You know, I do think we need to, it's always smart in these scrimmages to think both sides of, you know, Arkansas does feel like one of its strengths is its defensive line with a Landon Jackson, with a guy like Cam Ball, who seems like he's ready to take another step. But that even being said, you don't want to hear your head coach, who has all this experience coaching the offensive line, just be as – he was very blunt yesterday. You could tell Sam Pittman was not happy with how things went. Mm. He was – it was a different mood from him yesterday. I think the scrimmage probably – the week before kind of went maybe how you want it to, where the offense kind of owned a half of it and the defense owned a half. It felt like yesterday, from what all we heard, he did say the defense – there were some things he wasn't happy about with the defense, but that might have just been a result of him being – upset in general. He was but it just seemed like he was Sam Pittman wasn't a fan of what he saw in yesterday's scrimmage.
This is a tough point of any preseason. Teams get tired of facing each other.
Yeah.
And it's you kind of have to get through that grind there at the end. Ethan, we appreciate you. When we come back, we're gonna have Dave Van Horn, the Arkansas baseball coach, on to talk about his team as they get ready for fall baseball. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being here. I want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, serving its community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can find them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Dave Van Horn is entering his 23rd fall as the Razorback baseball coach. And Dave, how does that feel when you hear 23 years?
Well, I feel very fortunate. I mean, you see what goes on around the country. It's hard to stay at one place that long, and a lot of factors there. But, you know, obviously this is a place I've always wanted to be. It's been a great run. Hopefully we can keep it rolling. Just trying to take one more step, win that national championship. And, you know, we feel good about what we have coming in this year. And but excited for another fall. And taking on the SEC, it doesn't get any easier, I'll tell you that.
Plenty to ask you about your team. I wanted to real quick, though, touch on a news item that I saw yesterday. Evan Lee's been hired as the director of player development for Chris Curry at Arkansas Little Rock. Just what are your thoughts on that?
Excited for Evan. It doesn't surprise me a bit that Evan's going to, you know, coach. His dad was a coach forever, athletic director, also was a professional scout. Evan's very knowledgeable, really intelligent, you know, really good student here and outstanding baseball player. And you know, he knows the game from both sides. He was a great hitter. We were hoping we could get him back one more year. We felt like he would probably be our starting DH as well as a starting pitcher. But obviously the Nationals took him, and Evan was a little older for his grade and just felt like it was time to go. But my point being, he's going to know both sides of the ball, so to speak, the offense and the pitching side. So good for UALR and Coach Curry and Evan and his family.
Evan, I don't know if you'd call it the latest or the earliest, but he had one of them out for you. He got the last out of the 3:10 a.m. game against Missouri State. That's something I always remember about him.
Yeah, I don't remember much about that game except that we needed a boat to play it, and we finished it somehow, and we won it. But unfortunately, it didn't go so good the next day. We just didn't score enough runs.
So you've got your players back reporting this weekend. I think I've got this right. You start fall ball on September 3rd as far as team practice goes. What happens, though, in the interim over the next couple and a half weeks?
Well, we'll continue to get our guys ramped up. You know, we've had a lot of the pitchers come back really early this summer. The freshman class of pitchers, six or seven of them were here most all the time. They can work with our strength coach. He's getting them in shape, and you know they had to take some classes to be able to do that. A couple of the transfer kids, portal kids, enrolled in some summer school as well, and got here, got a lot of work in, and this just helps them kind of get their bodies right, so we can get right into fall practice and play games and that type of stuff. But you know, the guys that are just getting here now, most of them have been out and about playing. We've had an extremely good summer, so to speak, with guys out playing, doing well. But what we'll do is just continue to get guys ready. So when we get out there on the third and we start cutting and moving and diving, that they're not too sore the next few days, just try to get their bodies in shape as best we can.
I wanted to ask you about Cape Cod, because I know you went up to Massachusetts and you saw some of those players this summer. Ryder Helfrich had a big summer. Behiva Aloy had a really good summer until he shut it down in early July. I thought Tate McGuire, just based on the numbers, seemed like he pitched real well. And there were a number of others. Just what were some of the things that you saw this summer from these players who seemed like they may have taken a step in their development?
Well, you know, like Helfrich and Aloy, we asked them to try some things, example, with their stances and cut down, maybe shorten their strokes just a little bit. Sometimes it's hard to do that during the year. You know, guys, they don't want to change too much during the season. Well, they did that, and it was really effective. I really liked what I saw from Aloy. I mean, his patience at the plate. I think he was seeing the ball longer. Not so much of a leg kick, hands are lower, closed his stance. Defense was outstanding. When I was up there, his coach was trying to get me to try to talk into staying the rest of the summer. His comment was, you know, if he stays, he could probably be the MVP of the league. And if it stopped right now, he would be. And, but you know, that was the agreement all along. I think he was going to stay till around like July 19th or somewhere in there. And, you know, that's what he did. He hadn't been home and he needed a break and played every inning for us this past season. But really liked that. And then, you know, with Ryder, kind of the same thing. And he started working on it late in the spring, kind of getting rid of the leg kick, and just he calmed himself down, saw pitches better, and he made a huge jump. I mean, he hit for a lot of power. I think he had 11 home runs, drove in like 30 plus runs, and that's a lot in a summer baseball league. So excited there. And then some of the pitchers, they just went out and did well, you know, Wood and Coyle and Tate McGuire. I mean, Tate went up there early, and when I saw him pitch a few innings, he was really good. We always thought he was good. It just, he needed to maybe take it to the game a little bit more, and I think he'll be ready to help us this year. So we're excited about that. And I think Wood, when you see Wood, he's really in great shape, growing up, thinning up a little bit, more limber, and I think he's going to have a big year for us.
Obviously, the season didn't end the way you guys wanted it to in June, kind of came to an abrupt end. What's the mood been like in the building over the last couple of months?
Probably a little grumpy, to be honest with you. We're all like a little irritated. You know, we didn't see that coming. Maybe like it did. Not necessarily that we weren't going to win the regional, but, you know, it was a roller coaster. You know, starting pitching on Friday, we give them an 8-run lead, and then they tie it up 8-8. We've got our ace ready to go on Saturday, and we're thinking we made a great move pitching him in the 2-hole, and then we have to bring Gackle out of the pen on Friday. To me, was a killer for us, because he was our guy, honestly, at the time. And you know, K-State played a great game, and Smith had one bad inning, had some things not go his way. Wind's blowing out to right, guy hits one out of the park. Two infield hit, choppers over the corners. I mean, you kind of sit back and go, wow. And then we hit the ball all over the field. And the one that stands out to me is when we got it close, like we had a runner at first, two outs, and I think White might hit a ball off the left field wall and ricocheted off the left fielder's chest, sat right down there, and we couldn't score the runner first to tie it up. And you're kind of shaking your head going, wow, this is amazing. And I thought we had a good attitude going into that Sunday, and we just didn't hit. They threw a guy that was different at us, break balls, and they just beat us. And they could hit, and we knew that. And kind of a, like you said, a really disappointing ending. Makes you kind of sit back and evaluate some things. And obviously you do that throughout the year, but gives you more time to do it. And I think we've got some things that we needed to work on, and we're going to be working on them, obviously. But it was a tough ending. So the mood's been, hey, we got to get better. We got to be better than this. And, you know, you win 44 games, you win the Western Division, it's not enough. And that's the way our mindset is over here. We're not just hanging out waiting for the next year and going with our guys. And I think you know, talking about the mood to go out and get the right players for our program, get the right high school guys to make it to school, feel really good about our roster right now.
When the season ended, you talked about getting maybe a different kind of athlete. Does that mean do you change your offensive philosophy at all this year in as you get these different kinds of athletes?
Yeah, I mean, and I've thought that for a couple of years. You know, last year, the 23 draft, it crushed us position player-wise. I mean, it took our four best athletes. It took four high school kids, three infielders, and one of them is maybe going to go to the outfield, and then one straight-up outfielder that were all really good runners, athletic. I mean, between those four athletes, that was $11 million that was spent by organizations. So it was hard to replace that. We couldn't. We didn't have enough time. You know, obviously, we knew we were going to lose a guy maybe, but we thought we'd keep three of them, and we ended up losing them all, which was amazing. So, yeah, we went out and got some guys that we feel like they're a little more athletic. What do I mean by that? Maybe they're a little faster. You know, we have some pretty good athletes, but guys that, you know, we've got to train them to do some things. And so if you're asking about philosophy, you know, I've had teams have stolen 100-plus bases here before. You know, we've had teams that have hit 110 home runs or whatever. You got to be somewhere in the middle. You know, the home runs are still going to happen because the kids are bigger, stronger, just the way it is right now. But yeah, we'll be practicing and drill working and doing what we need to do to manufacture when we need to. Steel bases, we'll be working on that a lot more. You know, but you have to have the people that can do it, and then you have to train them to do it. You don't want to run yourselves out of games when you have good hitters. But really what we need to do is be better 1 through 9 offensively, you know, and I mentioned that last year, not trying to, you know, get on any position players or anything, but the outfielders carried the load or didn't carry the load like they did the year before. Last year was all about the infielders. It needs to be a good mix. Outfielders got to be able to swing the bat, catch the ball. Infielders obviously play really good defense, and but you got to be able to score. And, you know, we had some trouble scoring last year.
When we talked to you the last time, you couldn't talk about your transfers. I think they've all signed now. I wanted to ask you in particular about the three pitchers that you brought in. I think I'm saying his name right. Landon Beidelsies, Zach Root, and Aiden Jimenez from Ohio State, East Carolina, and Oregon State. What do these three add to your rotation or to your bullpen?
Well, first off, you did pronounce their names correctly.
I looked it up, by the way. I was hoping that Ohio State had it right in their media guide.
Yeah. I think most of the guys either call him Landon or they call him Cheese just to do it. You know, I think that's kind of his nickname. But what they do is they bring some experience. Obviously, a couple of them are left-handed, one right-hander. The lefties are, I mean, they're guys that are going to fight to be in the rotation. Nothing's given. You got to go get it. So those guys came in early. All three of them came in early. That says a lot. You know, we learned a little bit about maybe how to handle some things when you get transfers. And I think if you get transfer pitchers, you need to get them here. And you need to get them acclimated. They need to get in shape. And they need to be ready to go. And, you know, that's what those guys have done. It will be, you know, with Aiden, the right-hander, I think, you know, he's coming off some surgery. But he was going to be one of their main guys if he wasn't hurt. Just talking to some of their players or their players talking to our guys, you know, talking about him, that if he wouldn't have got hurt, he was a guy. And he's a big kid and he works hard and he's tough. And yeah, probably just the experience, the stuff is good. Now it'll get better being here and working with Coach Hobbs. And we return a lot of really good pitchers, but you never have enough, honestly. And we found that out last year.
I've got you at 51 players this fall, 29 pitchers, 22 position players. That's a lot. What are the advantages and maybe disadvantages of carrying that many players in the fall?
Well, yeah, I think we do have – I think that's our number 51, you know, unless somebody doesn't show up in the next day or two. So, you know, and it's funny how it all works. You know, as a coach, you're wondering, well, are we okay with this amount? Call around to other coaches, like they got 54, they got 55. So I feel like we're probably about where we need to be. Guys are, you know, they got to go out and compete. That's what it's all about. You know, next year at this time, we won't be able to have this many kids. This is going to be a year where we've really got to figure it out. numbers wise, and you know, with all the new changes coming in. But I feel good about the number. I don't feel good. You know, your question is, what are the good, what are the bad? The tough part is that, you know, 40 make the team as far as who gets to play come first pitch next February. So, you know, realistically, there's 10 guys that they got to make a move and, you know, got to get on that roster. So the competition will be good. I'll make for some good practice days. And, you know, we just let the cream rise to the top, so to speak. But I really like our roster. I like the left-handed pitchers. I like the depth of that, because we've had years here when we haven't had enough of those. And, you know, I like the arms, the right-handers. I like the mix of the high school kids. We got some really good high school pitchers in here that got through the draft. And, you know, a lot of people, they think, well, you get through the draft because you didn't get drafted. They didn't get drafted because they wanted too much money. A lot of people don't realize that. There's a lot of these kids that could have been drafted, but they wanted a lot of money, and they kind of bet on themselves to come here, get better. I mean, you think about what Smith just did. Probably could have got $1 million out of high school, and he signed for $8 million. Now, that's an extreme one, but these things are going on.
I was talking to Matt Hobbs, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he said that out of these freshman pitchers that you have coming in, he said at least two, maybe three, really surprised him that you were able to get them on campus. When we talked to you, I don't know, a month or so ago, you teased that you were going to have some outside competition in the fall. Anything new you can share with us there?
As far as what? Like,
as far as playing other teams in fall exhibition games.
Oh, yeah. Okay, some outside competition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I missed that. So, yeah, I mean, right now we're scheduled to play. You know, there was supposed to be an event in Omaha, Nebraska, and we were invited to it. They were trying to find some teams that might want to come up there, like second weekend of October, play at the, you know, at the park there in Omaha, the championship park. And they're looking for some teams that, you know, that are – that maybe have been up there a few times, but also they had a bye that weekend in football. We agreed to do it. It was all going down. And then I think it got too big. I think we were scheduled to play Nebraska at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night. And it would have been pretty exciting. And then they got together again, and I don't think they could handle it. Maybe it got too expensive. So what we did is, it looks like that, maybe that same weekend in October, we're going to play Oklahoma State here on a Friday night and a Saturday afternoon.
So play Oklahoma State twice.
Not set in stone yet, but we're looking at that, and that'd probably be the two that we would play.
As far as 25 schedule goes, I mean, we know you're going back to Arlington. I think I've seen the teams that are going to be there with you are TCU, Michigan, and Kansas State. Jay Johnson said you're coming to LSU. Not much more is known other than that. Anything you can share with us about the schedule?
Yeah, we do go to LSU. This, I think the schedule is going to be released sometime in September. I will just say this, a little teaser. The fans are going to love who we play at home this year.
Will they be wearing orange?
There might be a couple of them. So it'll be interesting to see. When it comes out. But I look at our schedule, and as far as league games and where we play, who we play, I don't know how you could have 30 tougher games than what we have, honestly. And you know, it's just the way it is. You know, there's a couple of teams that we play. There's three teams that we play every year since I've been here, because they were in our division. We don't play them this year, at least on the regular schedule. But I'll leave that to – I don't want to get in trouble, so I can't say much more.
I understand that. I could get into a whole long discussion with you about scholarships and roster limits moving forward, but we'll save that for another day. I do want to ask you, though, before you go, Kendall Diggs, what's his status as he overcomes labrum surgery? Kind of what's the recovery timeline like for him?
Yeah, so I feel like he'll be swinging the bat in – I mean, I'm hoping November, December, maybe December, just about full go, but I may be a little ahead of it there. I think if he's ready to go and he's 100%, I think he should be good to go when the season starts. You know, it was a pretty good tear. You know, a lot of people getting on him last year, which is really unfortunate. We didn't know how bad it was. He didn't know how bad it was. And again, I think he might have hurt it worse when he hit the wall at Kentucky late in the season, fell to the ground because it was torn on both sides. And I think he had to have a lot of work done in there. But, you know, good for him, good for us. It's non-throwing arm. We've had some guys with that before. You get it fixed, he'll be good to field, he'll be good to throw, and obviously good to hit. But I got to give him credit again, and I did it already once, for being as tough as he was to play through that. Yeah, he should be good to go.
Okay. Well, Dave, we appreciate you being on.
Okay, then. We'll talk with you guys soon.
Okay, we'll see you soon over at Baum Walker Stadium. Dave Van Horn, the Razorback baseball coach. We appreciate you all being with us today on our podcast. We'll see you again Monday. Have a great weekend.